Yes, absolutely.
Is it environmental?
Yes. Okay. So we are Earth Ministry. We are a Washington statewide nonprofit that is also connected to a national network of faith-based environmental stewardship and justice work. So we organize houses of worship from all different traditions around really thinking through what their faith has to say about care for creation and environmental stewardship, and then really thinking through how to take action and live that out. So on our first day, we really focused on thinking through why we care about the environment as people of faith. We named some of our values when we built our altar here, and I've left those on this board to remind us to keep coming back to time and time again. We can often get sucked into the grit of the work that we want to do, and it's so important to slow down and take the time to share why you're doing what you're doing. So that is our written down in our values. And then yesterday we talked about how we live this out in congregational life. So we have a program called our Greening Congregations program that supports houses of worship and really thinking through and bringing different aspects of greening into things like worship and education and the building space in your community life. So thinking about it on a community level. And then today, where we're shifting is towards the systemic level. So talking about advocacy as a way that we step out into the world to share these values, to amplify the efforts of our congregation through speaking up for policy reform that aligns with our values and helps create a more just world. Does that help?
It does, thank you.
And we are pretty chill, as you can tell. So we want you to get as much out of this as you can. So we want to be in conversation with you and not just up here lecturing. So please chime in as you have questions or thoughts. You're already doing that really beautifully this morning, but I just want to be sure to encourage ongoing dialogue. Yeah. Okay, shall we dive in? Okay, so curious about any, our entry points, I guess, into this work about faithful advocacy. So can I see a show of hands if you've ever signed a petition? Maybe you signed Earth Ministries yesterday. Okay, keep your hand up. We're going to kind of ramp it up to the different steps, okay? So, you've signed a petition. What about you have written your own public comment in writing online or maybe at a public hearing? Okay, what about attending a public hearing? What about testifying at a public hearing?
Never.
Speaking at the mic. Awesome. Okay. What about meeting with an elected official? Yes, we got some advocates. Okay, what about, what would be next? Testifying at a Senate or House hearing. Okay. Then I think next might be like Congress. The big dogs. But I haven't testified at Congress either. So thank you. No worries if your hand didn't go up at all. This is the 101 class, and there's skills to meet you at every step of the journey. But it's just helpful for us to kind of see where each other have been in this realm of advocacy as we embark. So I'm going to start with kind of an overview of advocacy, what makes it faithful advocacy. And then later on, Maddie is going to get more into how do we actually go about advocating as people of faith. So that's just to give you a little bit of a guide map. You can tell we like to give you tools, so there will be a handout to help you kind of think through how you can go out as a faithful advocate that we'll hopefully have time for towards the end. So that is our roadmap for the day. And we'll just start with what is advocacy. So I shared some examples there as we were raising our hands. But when I really break it down, I think of advocacy as democracy in action, as speaking up to influence decisions within political, economic, social institutions, and really ultimately addressing the root causes of systemic injustice through the policies that govern our society. So then what makes something faithful advocacy, right, versus your general secular approach? Faithful advocacy at its core is faith in action. So, you know, we like to go to church and sit and think and ponder. Some of us have much more an intellectual faith, but we are also called out into the world to be witness. And that is one of the ways we can do so through advocacy. It is speaking up for that systemic justice and addressing those root causes, but doing so based on our spiritual values and religious traditions. So I'll speak a bit from my own tradition. I'm Lutheran, ELCA. So for me, it's really a following in Christ's footsteps, right? I recently wrapped up my seminary journey, and through my scripture studies, really left with a strong picture of Jesus as a radical anti-empire advocate. He was not just okay with the status quo, but in many ways really pushing back against the system. It's also an act of co-creation. So at our foundation from the Christian tradition, we believe we are created by God and tasked with this dominion, which is a word that has been poorly mistranslated over the years, but really means like benevolent leadership, care, co-creation, co-caretakers, stewards of this place that we are entrusted with for our span of life and know will go on beyond us. Right? So it is how we can create, co-create that kingdom here and now as a more just and loving society that helps bring along all rather than exclude or leave behind. Maddie, do you want to speak to it a bit from a UU perspective?
I do, yes. Yeah, so I come to this work from my faith tradition of Unitarian Universalism, which isn't explicitly Christian, although some UUs, as we call ourselves, may also identify with Christianity or Jesus. That's not my personal practice of Unitarian Universalism. And our tradition is covenantal and non-creedal. So we covenant to be together and journey together without necessarily believing the same exact things, which can get complicated sometimes, as you may imagine. And so one of our guidance is around what's called the seven UU principles. And for example, like one is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And so that comes in a lot in my advocacy and thinking about, well, the climate crisis doesn't affect everyone equally, like poor folks and people of color are often disproportionately affected. And that's wrong, and that ties right back to that principle. Another of my favorite principles is the seventh principle, which is respect for the interdependent web of which we are all a part, which I think a lot of folks would identify with, even without being from a UU perspective. And so I think like a lot of people have interpreted that to me to be the critters outside and the trees and ecosystems and how that's all very fragile and dependent on each other. But I think it also goes, for me, it goes back to like humans, we're all connected, like none of us are free until all of us are free. Like that kind of like that kind of idea. And that also totally fits into like everyone should have clean water and clean air. That's where I'm going with that. Yeah, happy to talk more about UU if folks are curious later.
Yeah, thank you. So those are just the brief snippets from each of our traditions of what we bring into advocacy to make it more faith-centered than your average, you know, lobby visit with a social justice organization. I can't quite tell if this is on. Can you hear me yet? Okay. So, to help really break it down to of what do we bring to faithful advocacy, to differentiate, I'm going to just walk through a few attributes and kind of the gifts of each. So the first and main piece is that faithful advocacy is really values-based. So much more than facts and figures, we are working to stir hearts, which ultimately will get back to the mind, right? But we are mindful of being clear in articulating our values, because that is what can help connect with another individual. So, for example, you could show up and you could say, oh, the climate crisis is terrible, and you know, this port is emitting this many tons of carbon dioxide per day, which annually equals this much, and whoa, that's a lot. You could do that. Or you could show up and you could say, you know, I was at this community event and I heard a kid say that they just thought everyone was born with asthma. And that's just how it is. They live down by the port, underneath the airport, between two highways. So we know transportation is our largest polluting sector in Washington State. And we need to address that. We have a moral obligation to address that for current and future generations, like this young one that I heard, so that future kids don't just grow up thinking asthma is a way of life. So there's a difference there, right? There's the facts and figures, which are very ethereal, and then there's the really human embodied experience of real members of our communities. And that's what we want to show up and really be sure to tell those stories that will pop up in a decision maker's mind at the end of a long day. So with our values, it's heart-centered. I'll write this out for those of you who like to take notes. It is seeking justice and equity. So Maddie talked about this a bit with the UU principles, but another piece I want to bring in is that, especially for those of us in predominantly white communities, it's really important to follow the leadership of those in impacted communities, those currently feeling the climate crisis most severely, who have that lived experience and know solutions that would work for their community. So taking the time to listen, to follow, even if the vision is not quite where you would go with a policy or, you know, there was an example in our state legislature this year where, you know, the governor and the chairs of the environment committee had an idea of, oh, we're going to do this cap and trade, very complicated carbon tax policy. And community members said, like, that doesn't actually work for us. We've seen it elsewhere concentrate pollution in already overburdened communities. So here's what we would propose instead. Unfortunately, the governor did not listen and moved forward, kind of barreling through with the cap and trade policy. So we're now working to minimize harm in its implementation. But for us, coming in as a faith community, it is of added importance that we listen to those on the margins. And so for Earth Ministry, we chose to not support the governor's policy this year. And we got some pushback from our partners saying, you know, something is better than nothing, which can be true. But we believe that the climate crisis is a moral crisis, and how we address the climate crisis is also a moral issue. And that's something that the faith community can bring in that's unique in really reminding one another of that. The other point I have here around justice and equity is, of course, when possible, to advocate with, behind those on the margins to create space, not just to speak on behalf of. It's not always possible because there are a lot of barriers to participation. You know, a lot of these, like, hearings and things happen in the 9-to-5 time. So those with, working class jobs aren't able to show up, or who can't afford health or childcare can't show up to evening meetings either. So when possible, though, it's great to advocate with, not just for, those who are, really on the front line. And then the last, let me write up here. The last piece about the values-based attribute is that it's hopeful. So we got to this early on here in the session, but that we ultimately believe in God's goodness and grace, and that the arc of the universe bends toward justice. Right? So as we come in to advocate, we hold that hope, we paint that vision that is a bit brighter than what we might normally be given. And we know that we're not in charge here. Like, we're not the savior in the story. And because of that, a very Lutheran theology is we are free to act. Right? So we can let go of the paralysis that can come with that savior complex of feeling like I have to do it all, and realize it's impossible for me to do it all. Right? I will always be an environmental saint and sinner, as Luther would say. So accepting that allows me to then step into that grace space and to do what I can do in the gifts that have been given to me to share. Okay. So that's the primary attribute. I have a couple others to share. The first is that faithful advocacy really builds bridges. So we, as you I'm sure know, live in a rather polarized society that has become so partisan. And finding spaces to cross the aisle is thinner and thinner by the day. So, together in our houses of worship, I think, is one space where we can find ourselves with those from different walks of the political path, and can hold space for dialogue, for conversation that grows from what we do share, from our shared faith and the values that grow from that. And we can do that work of hard conversation. It's something that is challenging and can be really combative, but there's a difference when you do that in a space that's grounded in faith. Right? And the love that is inherent when you come together as community around that. And we can do multi-faith bridge building. So Earth Ministry has been stepping into becoming more and more multi-faith as part of our 2020 through 2025 strategic plan. If you've known us for a while, you might notice we've changed our logo because it previously had a big old cross in it. That was one of our big first steps in rebranding. But really being intentional in building authentic relationships with those across different traditions, finding where we do share values and also where we don't, and where there's beauty in different perspectives and approaches. One thing I'll share about building bridges is one of the advocacy campaigns we'll talk about tomorrow is around river and salmon recovery in Southeast Washington. Anyone from this part of the world? Okay. So essentially, it is like one of the most contentious conversations within Washington State right now. It is the future of the Lower Snake River and the dams that are outdated and blocking salmon return and spawning. And that's one of those conversations where if you're east of the Cascades and you just bring it up, like, immediately walls go up and defenses are on, right? So, for example, one role that Earth Ministry has played within that conversation is hosting a series of conversations that we call Loaves and Fishes, playing on the biblical narrative. So we have had these series where we invite in a tribal leader, generally from the Nez Perce, the Nimapu tribe, who are most directly along the Snake River, but then also a farmer, a fisherman, maybe commercial or sport, and then a pastor to mediate the conversation. And those spaces have been really beautiful to see come together. It truly is one of those loaves and fishes moments where you see crumbs turn into abundance. Because people do kind of show up like, oh, I'm not so sure. And then you hear and you're like, oh, actually, we all want a future where these community members are kept whole, right? We all want the grain to get to market. We all want there to be abundant fish. We want to uphold our treaty rights because those are the supreme law of the land, nation to nation. So the conversation can shift into more of like, how do we build this future together? Again, with that hopeful vision. So that's just one example of the bridge building that a faith-based approach can bring. And that, you know, is more of an interpersonal organizing effort, but it does spread out into our advocacy as folks go to talk to their decision makers, like the congressional delegation, about the future of the Lower Snake River.
Jessica?
Yeah?
Can you say a little more about how that unfolds? Is it at a community meeting or a church? And are people in attendance who are not already convinced of the wisdom of this conversation? I mean, what's the scenario?
So I'll kind of sketch. The last one we did was in Spokane at the Episcopal Cathedral. And we had those four constituencies there. So a leader from Nimaku, a farmer, a wheat farmer, a sport fisherman, and then also we had someone from our partner organization, Save Our Wild Salmon, who really knows a lot about salmon recovery. And then there was a priest who moderated the conversation. And so it kind of starts as a panel, kind of warming up. The crowd was a bit of a mix of folks who are like longtime Earth Ministry people, have followed us with this conversation, but also a lot of new folks because it was advertised across our coalition partners. So some folks that were less religious, some folks more religious, you know, everyone has different entry points. But a lot of people in the crowd afterwards, I recall being like, oh, I'd never heard the perspective of a farmer on this issue. Mm-hmm. You just hear the talk of like, well, farmers say they need to get their grain to market. But then you hear the farmer say like, actually, I don't use barges for most of my shipping. I use rail or truck. So there's a lot of propaganda, a lot of unlearning that happens in these spaces when you hear more directly from those constituency leaders who are living the experience versus what you hear on the paid ads, you know, in the fiery columns in the paper, and especially with this issue and with the, honestly, with the electric vehicles too. I'm surprised I haven't gotten many pushback yet on it from talking about it yesterday, because there's so much paid misinformation by industry that can just really get me frazzled, you can tell. So it's this dialogue, it's listening, it's asking questions, going back and forth, sharing like, well, I heard this, is that really like how it is for you? Oh, no, it's different. Hearing the spiritual aspect from Indigenous leaders is especially powerful, and hearing that this is not just a resource, right, but a family member. Really, the salmon people are so important to Indigenous lifeways and culture that it shifts the conversation, especially when you hear about that. And we always let the Indigenous folks speak first because, of course, they're the first stewards of this place who have been left behind the most. Does that help?
Yes, that's great. Thank you.
Okay. Let me do a quick time check. Okay, so I want to hit our one last point, which is that faithful advocacy is supported by community,
which we love.
Right, it's hard for me to write and talk at the same time, so. Okay, so I often like to joke that when I show up as a faithful advocate, I feel like I am Aragorn in that scene from Lord of the Rings where he has the ghost army kind of sweep in behind him and help save the day. Any nerds Know what I'm talking about? Yes? Okay. So I say that because when I show up as a faithful advocate, I will share the communities that I'm a part of. So I'll say, my name is Jessica, I am a member of Earth Ministry, or representing Earth Ministry. I'm a member of Valley First Lutheran Church, and a roster, about to be a roster leader in the Northwest Synod of the Washington ELCA, right? So sharing the communities of which you are a part of kind of amplifies your message, because especially in spiritual communities, it's implied that you gather around your shared values, right? And so when a decision maker sees you, it's almost like they see that ghost army behind you of other folks from your community who probably think likewise, right? I'm not saying that everybody at Ballard First Lutheran thinks exactly like I do about this specific policy on clean cars by 2030, but I can say, you know, something our church has been doing is Care More, Car Less Sundays, where we are taking one Sunday a month to really try to encourage biking, walking, carpooling as we get to church, because we really care about our emissions from transportation and want to do our part to reduce them. So we also want to see our state do our part to reduce them. So it's that amplifier effect. It also sustains, because advocacy is hard, right? And doing your own piece is hard as well, but sometimes you feel like you're like the prophet crying out into the wind, right? So when you do this work in community, you remember that you're not alone on the journey. And even within, I think that's why Earth Ministries community is really beautiful, because we often see in different houses of worship, there's like one or two people who like climate justice is their thing, and they're always talking about it, and everyone else is like, oh yeah, like that's the green team. Okay, you know, but within the Earth Ministry community, those individuals come together to network and remember that they're not alone in this work, and to share and help encourage one another. Okay. Yeah, and I think the last piece I have written down here, I think I wrote it somewhat beautifully, is that you're never alone when you do this work. Right? You're part of a movement of people who believe that another world is possible and who are willing to participate in that vision and in bringing that together. And you always have spirit fueling your work. So those are our attributes of faithful advocacy. And then the last piece that I'll touch on before Maddie dives into kind of the how-to aspect of this is the impact that this can really have. So some folks are like, okay, yeah, that sounds nice, but like, why should I actually spend my time doing this? So it's always good to remember that elected officials work for you. They're called representatives, right? So they are meant to represent you, and they need to hear from you in order to hear what to represent. They hear a lot from industry and big, deep money pockets, right? So we need to also speak up and be loud in saying, hey, I put you in office. So here's what I'd like to see in your term. We have heard from multiple electeds how valuable the stories that we bring are to them as they go forward in their daily work. So Representative Beth Doglio is an example. She's in the Olympia area, and she came to an event that I had hosted with Olympia area faithful advocates. You know, they're right by the state capitol, so it was kind of like rapid response training session for folks to show up. And the representative said, like, please bring us your stories, because I take those stories when I go onto the floor and I share them out. So they will actually say, hey, I had a constituent who came in and told me that they know a child who thinks that everyone is just born with asthma. Right? So those little snippets, those really powerful, short, values-rooted stories provide resources to your representative to represent you in their conversation across the aisle. My favorite fun fact about advocacy is that it only takes 7 points of contact to move a decision maker up or down a notch. So there's how many of us in here? Maybe 14. So together, if we were to have the same elected and approach them, we could bump up 2 notches, potentially. And that's not, you know, a no to a yes to a super yes, but it might be a no to, well, perhaps I should reconsider and look more into this. It might be a, oh, I don't have time for that, to like, well, I guess I better make time for that. And even if you're elected as someone that you trust to be representative of your values, you know, you're like, oh, they're gonna vote the way I want them to, like, why bother? Still, it's so important to contact them, because that push can be enough for their vote to shift from a yes to a heck yes, right? For them to be a champion of the issue and really start to push for it across the aisle and take more risks themselves. So those 7 contacts, really, it doesn't take much to kind of add this to the plate of who is representing you. My last 3 points are why be a faithful advocate as really providing a moral anchor for an issue, right? Again, it's, you know, we think this work needs all types, so we need our friends who are showing up, speaking to the science, the policy, the economics, all of that is really important. But when we bring it down to that core value, to the moral obligation that we all share to take action, that really provides that anchor that can help, you know, bring aground all of the rest of it. And it can also complement your individual actions. So we believe in the both and of doing what we can in our own lives and in our houses of worship. But we could go around changing all the light bulbs in the world and still need to be sure that the grid through which that light switch is connected to turn on the light is a clean, renewable energy source, right? So it can complement what you're doing in your individual life, and we really believe that both that individual action and the advocacy and the systemic change is important. Okay, I'm going to pause. Oh, we're right on time. And see if there are questions or any thoughts from this section on, you know, why be a faithful advocate and what does that look like? Yeah, Barbara.
One thing that keeps me from contacting legislators is wondering whether I need to create a big message. Could I have an effect by just a short sentence or two? That would encourage me to do it.
Right. You know, that's such a good example. Thank you for sharing that as kind of a hesitation you carry. Honestly, shorter is better. Right? These folks are busy, and they're getting a lot coming through their desk. So if you have a strong one sentence, hey, I'm a person of faith. I care about this because I'm called to be stewards of creation and work for justice. And so please follow suit and pass the 100% clean electricity bill, right? You know, you can flesh it out a little bit more, get maybe a short clip of a story in there, but really that is sufficient to get your point across. And the worksheet that we're gonna go through later will help you kind of build up to that. Oftentimes, honestly, it's an aide who is processing like any emails or comments that come in, and they'll do kind of check mark tallies too. So they'll forward like really good emails, but the legislator is so busy that they often aren't checking everything themselves. So even if you don't have time to do the story, or you just write it and say like, I'm a person of faith, member of Peace Lutheran West Seattle, I would really like us to see us pass the plastic bag ban that we passed and is now going into effect. So that will get a check mark at least and help build towards that 7. And the beautiful thing about doing this through your faith is you don't have to be the expert. That's the other main stumbling block that we see, is people being like, well, I don't know enough, I need to read up on it. I actually love when I am in a meeting with a decision maker and they ask me a question that I don't know the answer to. It's like, at first that panic moment where you're like, oh, I don't know, I should know. And then I kind of just take that breath and say, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I can get you in touch with somebody who does. You can always send them to Earth Ministry and we'll figure that out. But, you know, I'm not here as the policy expert in the room. I'm here because of my core faith values of justice and sustainability and interconnectedness. And that's why I really think that this is an important policy for us to move forward on in the times now. Right. So having that opportunity to kind of redirect back to your values can be really powerful and provide you with that space to really bring your message home. And, you know, if they keep pushing you, you can also just say, I don't know.
and that's okay. You an opportunity to go back to them.
Right. Yeah, to follow up. Say, I'll follow up with you. Or, like, I'll put you in touch with Jessica at Earth Ministry, right? Because they're the ones who encouraged me to come here. You don't have to be that expert in the room to speak up. Wayne.
You mentioned the importance of listening to and representing the experiences of people who are less fortunate than we. How do we, as congregations who are often very similar, how do we hear those voices and get that lived experience that we can share? Because so many of us are in our own little worlds that are not particularly diverse at times.
Right. Yeah, so the question is kind of, when we're in our homogenous bubbles, how do we, homogenous bubbles especially, how do we hear what those on the margins really need? And that is so important, and I think it's something that really has to be done well if you're going to do it. For us, we work in coalition spaces, and that's really important to us. So we work with the state's leading coalition of community of color-led organizations. It's a group called Front and Centered. And so when we're in those coalition spaces, figuring out what policies Earth Ministry and our members are going to engage on, we are really attuned to what Front and Centered is working on and how we can support that. And then we bring that back into the Earth Ministry community. So we do some of that work for you all, because, you know, we don't want just like individual congregations knocking on Front and Center's door day after day saying, what can we do? That said, it's also really important to invite in those other organizations that are representative of different communities than your own when you're having events. So you might want to see if somebody from Front and Center's Speaking Bureau would want to come and talk to your congregation.
And pay them.
And definitely offer honoraria. And one disclaimer I'll put there is be really mindful. We're getting a lot of requests for tribal speakers, which is great. We want to hear those voices and hold space for those voices. And be mindful of how we reach out and who we reach out to. Right? So reaching out to someone on a tribal council is like equivalent to reaching out to a state senator. Right? But often it's not treated with that same level of respect and authority.
Mm-hmm. Like, would you invite your
Patty Murray to come to
speak
adult
to
education
your school class? Like, you probably wouldn't, and she probably wouldn't take that request.
Yeah. So, you know, looking at what level of relationship is appropriate, how do you build authentic relationship? Maybe start by saying, okay, we should do our own work here. Let's start incorporating a land use acknowledgement in our life together as our congregation. Let's do our own learning. And then let's reach out to somebody from the Duwamish, you know, maybe after we start paying real rent, which is a really cool thing happening in Seattle area where individuals and companies are paying monthly rent to the tribe for the land on which we inhabit. So maybe you do that your own work first as building that foundation before reaching out is important. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I'll also just say if you go to Earth Ministries website, we recently came out with a JEDI statement. JEDI stands for Justice, Equity, Inclusion.
Diversity, Inclusion.
Yes, spelling is good. And that, like JEDI versus DEI, which some people may have heard of, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. JEDI comes out of some black clergy in the southeast of our country who said, okay, like diversity, equity, and inclusion is really important, but we have to have justice needs to be first. And so like you can read about that on our website, and then we also have links to people of color led environmental justice groups that we've really encouraged the Earth Ministry community to support, and these are groups that we are actively listening to and following, like front and center.
Question about what you'd mentioned about people paying rent to First Nations. How do we figure out how we can
do that?
Yeah, because I'm paying to somebody who's not an enjoyable person. You know, like
yeah, you'd rather give to a landlord you respect,
or you know, whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
Where can we find more info on that too?
I think it's a relatively new movement within Indigenous solidarity efforts. I have not really heard of it happening much elsewhere, to be honest. I think that the Real Rent program for the Duwamish in Seattle is kind of a flagship.
Mm-hmm. In Seattle.
Yeah.
Well, I also, like a lot of the east side, like Redmond where you live, I think is also Duwamish land historically.
Yeah, the lines are very loose.
What line?
Right? There's no lines in Indigenous culture and
Real Rent with the Duwamish tribe also has a lot to do with the fact that they're not federally recognized.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a whole
injustice there, yeah.
Yeah, so check it out if you're in the greater Seattle area. And then also, I think it came out of something that like a primarily white community group that was asking the tribe, like, what can we do? How can we support you better? And they said, well, you know, like, this is our land, like, what about paying rent, right? And then the white folks took their time and energy to create this system. So it wasn't something that the tribe had to create for themselves. So, you know, if you're in a different part of the state, nation, there's Indigenous land everywhere, and that could be something that if you do work to build those relationships over time, could be an offering to do a startup around.
Thank you. And I'll say a lot of our congregations in Seattle are already paying Real Rent to the Duwamish. Like the Lutheran church where we have our office has a sign out front about Real Rent saying we pay Real Rent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How much do you pay? What is, just to get a ballpark?
Oh, I mean, it's really individual discernment. They, on the website, have some suggestions and like some calculations for like, if this is what your rent is, like, do this percentage of it. There's a suggestion of doing the date of the treaty. I think it's 1855. So do $18.55 a month for an individual. But really it's discerning what's a meaningful amount for your community. And also looking at, you know, what other groups are you giving to and how can it be, you know, not necessarily proportional, but like in alignment with like the other organizations you're supporting as well. So it shows it's on that same level of value and importance. So we can talk a lot more about Real Rent because that's really awesome and I'm happy to do that, but let's get back to our advocacy because I really want you to leave with the tools for how you can take this out into the world. So Maddie is going to take us there and I will be the handout person.
Yeah, Jess is passing a handout titled Government 101. Some of this may be, everyone may already know this, but also I think it's really important to start with the basics for folks who maybe haven't engaged in advocacy before, because sometimes it is complicated, especially when you get into various agencies, etc., that aren't the governor or the legislature or Congress. So most folks are probably familiar with the three branches of government, legislative, executive, and judicial. Executive involves like in Washington, the governor, but also agencies like the Department of Ecology, the Department of Health, Department of Natural Resources, et cetera, where we also engage in advocacy there, which we'll also be talking a little bit more about tomorrow. So if you'd like to come back tomorrow, we'll talk about that. And as well as Earth Ministry, we're statewide, so we do a lot of state level advocacy, but we're also involved in some federal things like the Snake River salmon recovery, because those dams are federally operated. It requires an act of Congress to do things with that. And then we're also involved sometimes in very local things, like the Green New Deal for Seattle campaign is one that we've been involved in. So I won't go through this entire handout. It's really a resource for you all. Quick question, who knows their state legislative district and their representatives, or state senator and state representatives? Raise of hands.
It's okay if you don't.
It's totally okay if you don't.
I forget.
Awesome. Well, the really great thing is that it's fairly easy. I'm just speaking to Washington State for the most part, since that's what we're familiar with, but I think many states have this readily available online. It's also on my voter registration card. I recently moved back to Seattle, and it says like what your different districts are, and my city council district, etc. But there's a really great, the Washington State Legislature website, I can't speak to other states, but our state's website is actually very helpful. Like, I have really learned a lot from going on there. So if you can go to www.leg.wa.gov, and there's a menu that says choose, find your district. And so you can just type your address in there, and it will...
It's yes. On the paper.
Excellent, good job. And you can type your address in there, and it will tell you, in Washington, the state senate and state representative districts are the same. In other places, they're not necessarily, which gets really complicated. Mm-hmm. But in Washington, you have one state senator and usually two representatives in your district. They represent you and want to hear from you, I think, even outside of the legislative session.
Honestly, outside of the legislative session is the best time to reach out, because they're less busy and you can build that relationship and say, hey, like, what are your priorities coming up? Because they're already thinking about next year. So if Absolutely, you show up and say, yeah, it's really important to me that we pass a transportation package that includes widespread electrification of how we get around, right? And it's really important to me that we phase out toxic chemicals in cosmetics. Like, those are two of the things that we're already kind of looking towards next year, and they're also hearing about. And so if you help ground the importance of that issue for you and your values and bring that forward, then they're more likely to help it be part of their platform mm-hmm. for the coming session.
Absolutely. And like in Washington, the legislators it's not a full-time job all year round, so they're working really, really hard during the legislative session. But then many of them have other jobs outside, but they often have a ledge aide, they call them. One of my good friends from my congregation works as a ledge aide for a representative, and they're answering emails and passing emails along from constituents all year round. So, yeah. Callie.
Oh, sorry. I was just wondering, what is the legislative session in Washington?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, good. Jess is the legislative expert. It usually starts in January every year, and in Washington it alternates between what's called a short session and a long session. Do you want to say a little more about that?
Yeah, basically every other year it's 90 days versus, 120. So the longer years are when we talk about budget issues. Short sessions are generally harder to get bills through, honestly. So this year was a long session. And then this coming year, 22, will be a short session. So often bills are multi-year efforts, and the short session years are when we're really like planting those seeds for what we really want to see them go to bat for in the long session. That said, we have passed great bills during short sessions as well, so it's not like they're a waste of time, but it's definitely feels different. Like, short sessions are more of a sprint, and long ones are more marathon stamina.
Yeah, and just to go back to finding out who your legislators are and what your district is, if on that website that's on the paper, leg.wa.gov, that will also tell you your congressional representatives, which many folks are more familiar with who those folks are since the districts are bigger, and there's national coverage of a lot of things in Congress. So yeah, it's a one-stop shop. I will also say it's also fun to put in your congregation address. If you know that, or if you're affiliated with a congregation that may be in a district different from where you live. And I would say legislators are often, especially at the state level where the districts are smaller and more local, like, legislators are often familiar with who the community institutions are in their district, and that might be your congregation. Mm-hmm. And what your congregation says or talks to them about might matter a lot to them. Mm-hmm. So moving, that's a good segue to congregational engagement. And so most congregations are 501c3s. Earth Ministry is a 501c3 nonprofit, which means we can't do electoral organizing in terms of supporting a specific candidate. But we can do get out the vote work, get people registered to vote, and we can advocate for specific policies. We do have a lobbying limit, but I don't anticipate any congregation going over their lobbying limit. And that's a question we get a lot is, oh, like, we can't do lobbying as a congregation, and that's just not true necessarily. Some things our congregations have done is hold candidate forums, where that's totally fine for a congregation to do as long as you invite all of the candidates. And you may say, hey, we want to have this on a variety of social justice issues that are really important to our faith community. And that's something that a lot of faith communities can do. I also, like, some of our congregations during the legislative session get really involved and help organize their whole community to advocate for a set of policies. Like my congregation, University Unitarian Church in Seattle, we had a whole advocacy workshop near the beginning of the session, and then had our different issue area social justice teams talk about what's going on in the legislature in terms of immigration justice or climate. I shared about climate justice policies from that Earth Ministry was advocating for this year. And so, like, one of my favorite things to do is try to get people to sign our petition or submit a comment online after worship. And that was over Zoom this past legislative session. But those are absolutely things you can do within your congregation. Have petitions out at coffee hour. That's another thing that our congregations will often do. Yeah, anything else on congregational engagement?
Yeah, I'll just add, I think we're using a lot of examples from the state legislative session, but democracy is really a year-long season, right? So there's always something that you can speak up on. Some of it is more exciting and shiny, which would be the legislative session, but you know, there's the implementation of all the bills that we have to pass, mm-hmm. or that we have passed.
Yeah.
So an awesome example of that ongoing work is a bill that Earth Ministry helped pass in 2018 around toxic chemical reform. We were speaking out on a class of chemicals called PFAS, P-F-A-S, which are nasty, non-stick things, like think Teflon, Gore-Tex, that stuff. Super pervasive. They call them forever chemicals. So we passed a bill that bans them in food packaging, which is awesome because they're like used in pizza boxes and popcorn bags, right, to repel grease. That bill is in the implementation phase in its second round, and we just mobilized folks this spring to participate in this like obscure comment period with the Department of Ecology about the timeline for this
second round. Yeah, we were the only ones that...
Yeah,
we got like 130 comments, which is sounds like a lot, but really it's not a lot when you think about it.
Yeah, when you think about how much this impacts everybody in their daily life across all walks of life.
Everybody.
What do you mean comments? Like people who are responding to what you said? Or?
So we built out a form. We always like to make it as accessible as possible. Mm-hmm. So we built out action forms, which makes me remember, please do take a moment to sign in to stay in touch so we can send you these actions. As they come up, I promise we don't send too many emails and are really mindful of the geography of when and where we send them.
Mm-hmm. And we send emails that may be specific to your legislative district.
Yeah. Which is why it's important to fill out your address.
Yeah.
Anyways, so when we say comment, like we'll fill out a form, it'll have a base language, and then you can go in and edit that and personalize it. And say, you know, like, I love popcorn, and I was so devastated to find out that these chemicals are even in the bag of popcorn I have after a long day of work. Like, come on, let's do better. So those opportunities to personalize, but also if you don't have time, you can use our base template and send it off.
And so, if you don't know anything about PFAS and food packaging, most people don't. Mm-hmm. Like, we have that information there for you where you can learn a little bit mm-hmm. about it. If you want to learn more, you can always ask us. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to be an expert to comment on a fairly technical comment period.
Yeah, because what we did is basically just encourage people of faith to say, like, we need to do this faster. Like, this is a moral issue that, like, this is mm-hmm. so widespread, right? There was a study that just came out and was published, peer-reviewed, and also there was a good coverage of it in the Seattle Times about how 100% of women tested had this chemical in their breast milk. Right? And so this is something that is like really directly impacting our kids. So all to say, we'll talk more about PFAS tomorrow, but I share this as an example because we got these 130 comments in, and then one day Maddie and I were overjoyed to get an email from Department of Ecology stating stakeholder input for the reason why they're speeding up the timeline on the phase out of these chemicals. So
By 6 months.
So that was directly the advocacy of the Earth Ministry community. Like, our comments are in the public record, and really it was mostly us.
It was
all speaking up. That was enough to really make a difference in the timeline of this process. So that's an example of these like ongoing off-season advocacy campaigns that, you know, are hard for the average person to kind of track down, but
like you that's what Earth Ministry does. Unless you were on this one listserv on the Department of Ecology. Like, it's accessible as, I think they really do want to be accessible to the public, but in practice, like, that's not a thing.
Yeah. I'll also say in terms of what you can and can't do, something that you can do as a congregation is support ballot measures. So initiatives, you know, that you have to have a certain number of signatures to get onto the ballot, and then you can tell your congregation, please vote yes on this. That is within the acceptable realm of a 501c3 nonprofit. So I think, you know, the powers that be want us to think like, oh, separation of church and state, we can't do anything at all, right? But we all carry our values through the world, and they subconsciously inform everything that we do. So we can also bring them to the forefront and say, you know, I'm not telling you have to believe exactly as I do, but here's what I believe, and that informs, you know, the future that I want to see. Okay.
Thanks, Jess. Yeah, love it. Yeah, and so we kind of went through examples of what advocacy actions were at the beginning with Jess asking folks to raise their hand. Then if you signed our Clean Cars petition last night, which was really exciting, and your name will go to the governor. And maybe he knows you or not. We'll look. But the numbers matter for that. Karen asked a great question about what's a comment? Like, what does a comment look like? And that involves usually writing something, or we write it for you and you sign on to it. or you can personalize it, like Jess was saying.
And comments go into the public record too. So, I mean, I don't say that as like, ooh, pressure's on, it goes in the public record, but like, it's there, you know, it's not just like going off into the wind.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, this was more applicable to when we were doing in-person legislative session, whereas the past year, the legislative session was pretty much all online, which was good because meetings were more accessible for folks that wanted, that couldn't drive over to Olympia. But at the same time, legislators could be picky and choosy about who they decided to take meetings with because they had these, like, it's harder to say, oh, I'm busy when someone's outside your office door, like in Olympia. and one of the things that Earth Ministry often does during those situations is doing a literature draw. You should tell the Valentine's story.
Oh.
I love that.
Okay. So a literature drop is when you show up, you hang out with Maddie and me for the day at the state capitol, and we walk door to door to every office and hand out materials. More and more they're saying, email it to us because they want to be paperless, which is good. But sometimes there's just something about giving a good piece of paper and it being something that stands out in a mailbox. So one year we did a lit drop on Valentine's Day, and we made a heart-shaped handouts that were kind of a play on Valentine's that you give, that be my Valentine, vote yes on blah, blah, blah. And we actually, we've done that a couple years, and one of them we put like a little, like Hershey's Kisses or whatever on them and like sent them out to the floor. So if you ever get to visit your state legislator, it's pretty cool, like, to see the floor where all of the magic happens and they vote and stuff. And we sent out the candies to the ones who had endorsed the bill, and so there were folks like, why am I not getting one? What's that for?
I wonder why.
So that was, you know, sometimes we just gotta get creative and have fun with it while bringing our, you know, morally rooted message.
Yeah.
We all, because you're talking about meetings and getting meetings, I'm going to pass around this resource. Please don't spend time reading it right now, but it's another good take home for you about kind of how to prepare for a meeting with a decision maker and, you know, how to convey your message in those meeting spaces. So this is just another tool to add to your collection. But I think we should probably move into our worksheet.
Yes, let me say like two more things. Yeah, I'll say, Jess mentioned public hearings. That also can be a big part of our work, especially in our work finding fossil fuel facilities, which we'll talk a little bit more about at tomorrow's workshop. But the one thing that has been great for me during the pandemic, as someone who's fairly shy and doesn't love public speaking, or getting up in front of a big room of people and speaking. A lot of these hearings have been on Zoom with your video off. So they can just hear you, you can wear your pajamas, you don't have to dress up nice. And so like that's one thing that I hope hearings will be more accessible to folks that can't get there in time or need to stay home and watch their kids, like what could hop on to testify really quickly. Yeah, so if you are on our list, we will definitely provide more information about that. Jess, do you want to do the share your story?
Yeah.
Stuff?
Okay, so this is our last handout of the day, but I think it's very handy. And we might have enough time to start working on it. So what Maddie is passing around is the template for you to craft your story. And this is what you kind of bring into your advocacy spaces to really kind of put the pieces together and outline what you want to say. It kind of, you know, in this work, we're wanting to not center ourselves, but you know, like, kind of be like, yeah, I'm the hero in this story, right? Like, I'm the Frodo, or maybe Sam. I think Sam's much more of the hero, really.
Okay.
I know, sorry, there's no female characters in Lord of the Rings.
So really naming who you are as the first step, what your spiritual religious identity is, what community members or community you are a member of, what neighborhood, city, district you're in. So naming who you are, really clearly sharing your values. So here on the bottom, you can see a list of some ideas of values that you can name. We also have, of course, our awesome values board here to look back on. Naming who the villain is. So I will say this comes out of like a really well done communications organization, Fuse Washington, and they do like a whole narrative advocacy toolkit. So this is kind of adapted from that. And one of the things that I remember them sharing when I did the training there is that it's important to name who the villain is, right? Because the villain isn't the person you're talking to.
No.
And you don't want them to get defensive thinking that you're like, come on, why haven't you got us on clean energy? Like, the villain is most often industry. It's the fossil fuel industry. It is the chemical industry. It's those big money players that...
People that make money off of polluting our communities.
Yeah. And so it's important to, when you can, direct back to that. To help deflate any of that offensiveness that can pop up for who you're talking to. And at the very least, just remember not to villainize the person you're talking to. Then the part four here is to embark on your quest. So that is when we paint the picture of the future we want to see and how we're going to get there. So you see the first section here is together we build a better world for all when we blank. When we transition towards vehicle electrification, so we can get around in ways that are much more clean and healthy for the communities through which we drive. Okay. So please enact an executive order for us to have all cars registered in Washington be electric by 2030. So starting with that picture you want, how are we going to get there? A very clear ask is important. The story is important, of course, but you want to be sure that you don't, you know, just get sucked into it and at the end they're like, but what were they wanting me to do, right? How are we getting there? So one sharp ask is really important. So then there's space here for you to kind of put together those pieces. My name is Jessica. I value future generations and really care about my god baby who's in Bellingham. So I'm really wanting to see a future where Lionel's community is transitioned off of fossil fuels. And because of that, I'm asking for you, the Bellingham City Council, to pass the ban on all new fossil fuel infrastructure here and in our city. So please do move forward with this legislation we've been talking about for 12 years, which just happened in Bellingham. Yay!
Yeah, it's a big deal.
So that is an example. And then finally, at the end of the worksheet, is a bit of like accountability and thinking how you're going to take this out and who you're going to tell about this. So it's important to talk to our elected officials and decision makers, but it's also just important to grow public awareness about these topics that we're advocating on. Right now, one of the campaigns we work on is around a fracked gas facility in Tacoma, Washington, that is then built on the land of the Puyallup tribe on their ancestral lands and waters against the desire of tribal council. And many activists. So, for example, it's in a legal appeal right now. The tribe has appealed it. We're going to be talking a lot more about it
tomorrow.
So come back for the full picture.
I get very fired up about it.
Maddie will go there. but, for example, it's in this legal appeal. There's not much that we can do to influence the legal process
right now. Yeah.
But what we've been asked by the tribe, by the lawyers, is to help spread awareness in the court of public opinion. So that is talking to your community members, your family, your neighbors, and saying, did you know that this is happening? So one thing Earth Ministry has been doing with that is a photo petition of people of faith holding a sign that says that we are in solidarity with the Puyallup tribe in resisting this facility from going online, and posting that on our social media and sharing that around to help build that awareness. So that's all to say that I do encourage you to think through who you will talk to about these things. And remember that you don't have to know all of the answers to any questions they might ask you. You can say, oh, you could look at Earth Ministry for more info. But just say like, wow, this is something that I'm like, I have some passion building in me around this issue. And that might, you know, spark something or bring an ember to life in somebody else. So we have about 10 minutes before the end of our session. We could use that time, if you want, to do some work on this handout and practice, and then let us know how that is. Or we can do some more group conversation. I'm open to taking it wherever
or if folks have questions.
You all think is most helpful.
So can I ask a couple electric vehicle questions?
Yeah.
Since you said you were surprised you didn't get any. Mm-hmm. So I've heard that, the common beginning to a question, that producing the batteries produces a lot of pollution, and that one of the things we're doing is, in a sense, exporting pollution from rich countries that buy electric cars to poor countries that produce batteries. And what's your take on that?
Oh yeah, gosh, any environmental issue is such a lose-lose situation. Sometimes it's such a downer. My response is that as we commit more and more to this future of electrification, we will have increasing innovation and investment in the technology, right? So clean energy jobs here in Washington State are really booming. And if we were to pass a mandate that says we're moving towards all electric vehicles, then that could become a new market for production here in state, and will be increasingly along the West Coast, as California has made such a commitment. Theirs is for 2035. Raising up those concerns of, like, if you do go and you talk to a dealership and you're like, oh, I really want to be sure that this is a, like, an American-made vehicle, because I don't want, you know, unfair labor practices to be involved. Like, can you tell me about the sourcing of the material? That's a way of advocating, in a way, because if, you know, that person working at the dealership hears it 7 times, they might go tell their boss, like, hey, I'm hearing this a lot. Like, what are we doing about this? And then that could, you know, continue to spread. But generally with electric vehicles, you hear a lot of, like, grumbly pushback about the batteries. And like, I was talking to our partners at an organization called Cultura, who is the lead on this campaign, and they were like, 100%, there's so much misinformation paid for by the fossil fuel industry, because they want us to believe that it's not possible, that it's so much dirtier. Really, the batteries being used in EVs today last twice as long as the car batteries that are in gasoline vehicles, right?
That also run on fossil fuels that are extracted.
Right. And they're often repurposed at the end of their life. You often hear about, like, well, what do we do with them when we're done with them? They're being repurposed already to hold energy capacity, like at solar farms and stuff like that. So, you know, as we continue to make this investment, we're only going to see that innovation and homegrown jobs and commitment to this broaden and widen.
So my second question was, and maybe the 2030 requirement would resolve this, but I was recently trying to buy a new vehicle and trying to buy a plug-in electric hybrid, and they weren't available in Washington, these models. And you could go to Oregon, but Oregon, you wouldn't even get a call back from a dealership. And I was told it was because we're already so good in Oregon, in Washington, we don't need those extra vehicles in order to make our quotas, that they've got to go to Oregon because Oregon can't make the quotas because they have too many pickup trucks or something. You know, I mean, so there's, that sounds like misinformation too.
Yeah.
That's a marketing technique.
Yeah, yeah. Really also like supply and demand, right? So if we start demanding it more, they're going to have to start supplying it more. And if it's a government goal, then that certainly has, there has to be.
That seems like that would help.
Right. It will also help with incentives and affordability. So if we're making this shift and it comes through, that's one of the other things. People say, oh, we're moving there anyways. We don't need to have a target for it. Well, if we do this through public policy, then there are going to be built-in mechanisms to help make it affordable with rebates and whatnot for those who might not be able to afford it as early as we'd like to see. So that's a benefit of doing it through this way rather than letting the market drive the shift.
Yeah, and I'll say that the Clean Cars 2030 policy that passed the legislature that then Inslee vetoed, you know, it didn't outlaw gas cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So if you have a used car, you can buy a used car in 2035, and it could be a 2028 model and run on gas, and that's fine, right? So we're not like saying they all go to the junkyard. It's just we're phasing out.
Gonna make them more available.
Yeah, yeah, it's exciting. I'm really hopeful that we'll get there. Yeah.
On the topic of cars and pollution and electric vehicles, I just purchased an old 2001 Subaru Forester in Oregon from my uncle, and I brought it up to Washington, and I was just surprised that I didn't have to complete like a clean air
or like an emissions testing.
Yeah, like because that's a law down in Oregon. You mm-hmm. always have to have these regular things. So it made me kind of, because I'm not in the know about this, I was kind of thinking like, oh, like are we good? Like is there just not that much pollution? I don't know.
Yeah, I would have to look into that more because I know with my old car that I had to take it to get regular checks and like bring that proof to renew my registration every so often.
In Washington
here.
Yeah, emissions testing is definitely a thing that happens throughout. Like when you need to get new tabs, etc., sometimes they'll make you go do emissions testing. So I bet in the future you will have to do that.
There wasn't even a place.
It's stopped.
It's gone.
It's completely gone. I have an old car also.
Interesting.
And I had to do that every two years.
Every 2 years, yeah.
But,
and I think it's because as cars have gotten, the old cars have gone out of the market, the average pollution of cars has improved, and so they're not doing emission
testing. Interesting, that makes sense. That's
now
that you say that.
Facilities are COVID testing.
Yeah, I was going to say, now that you say it, I'm pretty sure the drive-through COVID test I did was at the emissions site.
It's just a little like deceiving because it like makes you feel like you're like, oh, like my car's fine, like I'm not polluting, you know, or it just...
And you don't know whether it is or not.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and an old car, you're using something that already exists, so creating a car creates pollution too.
Right.
You know? So there is...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And but used is
so
the worst.
Polluting.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So we'll talk more about the EV stuff tomorrow and encourage you to come to hear about all of our campaigns. In our last couple minutes here, I'm curious if someone wants to like give it a go with the storytelling advocacy piece. Like if you want to just pick a campaign, climate justice, fossil fuels, transportation, toxic, salmon, orcas, and just try
the Holden Line cleanup.
Yeah, the Holden Line cleanup. And try using this format to spitball a story. You heard mine with my god baby.
I always enjoy finding things in common with legislators. Like, oh, I know you have kids, or I know you have grandkids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great starting point.
Yeah, and everyone cares about their kids and their grandkids, or should.
Yeah. Sure, I will give it a try.
Woo!
I'm relatively new to Washington, so I don't know. lot, but so hi, my name is Callie. I am a person of faith and also a young adult and an avid bicyclist. And I'm also a member of a faith community at Fullness of God Lutheran Church at Holden Village in Chelan, Washington. And I really care about treating people with dignity and respect and keeping our earth inhabitable for future generations, especially as I am kind of at the point in my life thinking about children, maybe someday. I really am concerned about the future I leave them with. And the pollution from transportation is the largest sector in Washington, and that's really not great. We need to do all that we can to change that. So we build a better world for all together when we implement policies that will bring us towards having all electric cars in the very somewhat short-term future. So please sign executive order 20 blah 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 and for the insert name of legislation here.
Amazing. Yeah, and you got that really personal piece with you're at the stage of life considering kids. Like, yeah, that's something that will ping the heartstrings of another.
Future
voter. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being brave and doing that. And I encourage you all to take that out too and practice it, because every time you say it out loud, it gets a little bit easier, right? Practice doesn't make perfect, never perfect, but practice helps you makes you feel more comfortable going out there. And that this is the, kind of gives you enough of a framework to roll off of. You'll notice that Callie was kind of following along, and so that was a great example. Thank you for sharing. Okay, so it is time for lunch. Woohoo! I hope that you maybe feel like faithful advocacy is a little bit more approachable. Can we maybe do just like a show of hands? Like a five is like, heck yeah, I'm gonna go write the governor right now. A one is like, nope, this is not for me. Where might you be feeling around advocacy? Cool, our average is up there, so that's great. And hopefully it's maybe one finger more than you came in with today, and you'll keep building those muscles and exercising this skill, and we are here to help support
you. Yeah, we never do it alone. Like, we love to support people and provide you the resources to feel successful.
Yeah, like, for example, if there is a public hearing and you're like, I want to sign up to speak, but I'm kind of nervous about it, email us, and like, we're happy to like talk to you, to look over any testimony. Usually it's about 2 minutes, which is one page written. And so, you know, if Callie wanted to take what you have as a starting point and kind of bounce ideas off of us, we're happy to provide feedback on that individual level. Cool.
Can I give a plug?
Yeah, Sue.
I don't know if you've already done this. I'm from First United Methodist in Seattle, and they've come, Earth Ministry has come to the church several times and talked to our congregation. I was probably the one when I first started hearing about them, and I, now they just make it so easy, and it was just wonderful. So,
oh, thank you, Sue. Yeah, we're happy to come visit your community.
A great resource if anybody really wants to become involved.
Awesome.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some action items tomorrow and opportunities for film screenings or things that you want to maybe want to do in here. Congregation.
All right, go in peace. Enjoy lunch.
Lunch,
feel free to take any handouts.
Oh, and we have some copies of our newsletter.